Thank you, Jim. We're on the second of our series of 5 weeks, what we've called our angel series, but it's actually nothing to do with angels, but that's by the by, looking at artists' impressions of how you feel or felt when you did this consultation some years ago, Trinity ought to be in terms of shape. And one of those areas was entitled Pastoral, Full of Love for Each Other, the World, and All People. So I've called this Unconditional Love. When I was about 18 years old, my grandma died, very old lady. And she left me £500 in her will, which in 1980 was a nice amount of money for an 18-year-old. And she left me this money, and I immediately went out and I bought a car, because that's what you do. And I thought it was the bee's knees. I thought it was just curb appeal beyond belief. I was going to get any girl I wanted on my arm. I was going to be able to just... It was a 1974 Fiat 128. Basically, it was a Larder with a different badge. But I thought this thing had real Italian panache. It had a throaty roar on its 1100 engine, which I decided was just its Italian kind of gusto. It actually was a hole in the exhaust. No engine management systems in those days. It broke down frequently, and you could mend it with a screwdriver, which I often did. Can't do that anymore. And I spent an awful lot of money on it. I spent 500 quid on it. It wasn't worth nearly that. I must have spent another 300 or 400 on it over the next 2 years, and I sold it for £100. And that was not a great move in terms of investment. But you know, when you're that age, the world's at your feet, and you don't really think forward. If I had saved it in those heady days of the 80s, within 5 or 6 years, I could have probably doubled that 500 quid and done something really boring with it. But I didn't do anything boring with it. I did something with it, and it's with me to this day. I can still smell the inside of that car. I think it's probably gone to the crusher long, long ago. But there we are. You know, when Peter sits down with Jesus after the resurrection on the beach, Jesus says to Peter, "Do you love me more than these?" And what Jesus is doing is looking to invest for the future. Jesus has not ascended yet. His church is about to be built, and he's about to invest for the future. And I just want to go through some of these words with you for love. Many of us know that there are several Greek words for love. Can you just put a slide up for me, Chris? Some people say there's 3 or 4 words in Greek for love. There's actually 8 or 9. And some of them are subdivided. These are not all of them. The ancient Greeks would have been horrified at the clumsiness of our language, of our English language. The way that we use the word love in the way that we do. The way that we can say, "I love McDonald's hamburgers," and then go and talk about making love. Or talking about loving our grandma's apple pie. It doesn't make sense. The Greeks broke it all down into completely different meanings. We start at the bottom. These are just some of them. Philosia, love of self. Even that is divided into a couple of types, but we haven't got time now. But philosia is a love of self. In its worst form, it's a kind of narcissistic love, in its most damaging form. But at its best form, it's a self-confidence that helps us to love other people. Because we're confident in ourselves and in our identity, and we're able to encourage and help others. That's that kind of love. Moving up the list, pragma is a long-standing love. That's a description of a love that is kind of between an elderly married couple, perhaps, who've been married for 40, 50 years. Or a long-standing, very, very, very deep friendship. It's a long-standing, enduring kind of understanding love. Ludus is a playful love, kind of a mischievous... what's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of it. But it's sort of a mischievous love, a kind of love between I don't know, when a young couple first go out together and sort of flirting, that's the word, kind of a flirting love, or it can be a love that's actually shared between any friends as they're just having fun together and being a bit of a kind of ludus, mischievous, playful love. Storge is love of family. That's the love that is shared between family members. The same love that is shared between a parent and their children, or between siblings. It's a different kind. You're getting the feeling for this, aren't you? It's a different sort of feel of love. Eros, sexual love. And then philia is a brotherly love. That's a kind of brothers in arms type love. That's the love of guys holding together on the battlefield. And standing arm to arm, shoulder to shoulder, shield to shield, not letting each other down, but being there for each other. That's philia. And agape, the top one, is probably, and is indeed, the highest form of love, as the historians and commentators have told us down the century, unconditional love. The kind of love that is not just with those who love us back. It's a love for anyone and everyone, for the stranger, for those who distress us, and it is an unconditional, utterly sacrificial, self-giving love. And the agape love is the love with which Jesus loved. Now, when you go back to that passage in John 21, what we read there is a wonderful picture of Jesus reinstating Peter. Those of you who know the story will remember that Peter denied Jesus excuse me, three times when the cock crowed prior to the crucifixion. And this is like a reinstatement. It's almost like Jesus is asking him three times in order to counteract the three denials. And the words that are used in the Greek are really very interesting. Now, I was away the day they did New Testament Greek at college, so I'm not very good at it, and I really don't know it very well at all. But I do know this, and I have looked it up in my Greek New Testament, and it is there. It is very plain, and it is very, very clear that there are different words of Greek being bandied around here. Jesus says to Simon Peter, verse 15 of John 21, Simon, son of John, do you truly agape me? I'm fed up with that thing. Kick it down again. John 21, Jesus says, Simon Peter, son of John, do you truly agape me? Do you truly agape me? Do you agape me more than these? There's debate amongst the commentators, they're sitting on the beach, as to what all of these means. It might have meant the other people on the beach around him. We know John's around because he comes into the conversation later on. There'd have been other fishermen around, other people. Do you love me more than these? One commentator has suggested that it's more than these things. The boats, the nets, the stuff of business, the stuff of life. They're sitting around a working day. Do you love me more than your life, more than your well-being, more than your livelihood, more than your income, more than your business? Do you love me more than all of this? Do you agape me, Peter? Peter's reply is, yes, Lord, you know that I philia you. You know that I philia you. You know that I love you like a brother. I stand with you. I will stay with you. I won't deny you. This is a kind of counteract to the denial of the garden, of the pre-crucifixion denial. Brothers in arms, I'm with you, yes. Jesus says, okay, feed my lambs. But again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you truly agape me? And Peter answers, yes, Lord, you know that I philia you. And Jesus said, okay, take care of my sheep. The third time he said, Simon, son of John, effectively saying, I need to know this. I need to know, do you agape me? And Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you agape me? And he said, Lord, you know all things, and you know that I philia you. That's very interesting, isn't it? I love you with a brotherly love, but I don't love you with an unconditional love. I can't love you fully and sacrificially, but I do love you with a brotherly love. Okay, says Jesus, then feed my sheep. I tell you the truth, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. And Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And then he said, follow me. Now, when we read that passage, we often think, what a morbid, sad, horrible, difficult passage. Jesus is telling Peter that he's going to die a horrible death. And, oh, no, this is awful, this is awful. What's actually going on here is that Jesus is saying to Peter, I know you, Peter, my friend, and I know you are only capable of philia love towards me. And I require from you agape love, unconditional sacrificial love. But I'm going to get you to follow me anyway. And do you know, one day, they're going to lead you where you don't want to go. You're going to do this. And what Jesus is really saying is, you haven't got agape love for me now, but be of good heart, you will have. You will be able to be sacrificial. You will be able to give it all. You will come to a point in your life as you mature and as you grow in your faith when you understand what agape love is, and you will agape me, and I want you to be encouraged. And that's what's really going on in this passage. And for us, friends, there's a huge amount of encouragement in this reading. Jesus is reinstating a man who is not reaching his standard. Last week when I stood here, I was saying how the bar is so very, very high when we seek to follow Jesus. What we tend to do with that is run away home, and then we think about it and we think, oh, heck, that means I'm just destined to fail and feel miserable about myself. The truth is the other way around. The truth is the opposite. The bar for following Jesus is fantastically high. It's fantastically high. None of us are going to make it. Peter, on whom Jesus built his church, didn't reach the bar. And what does Jesus do? Reinstates Peter into the highest authority of the early disciples and builds his church on him and effectively says, be of good heart, it'll come. You will. You'll get there. I'm going to build my church on you and you. I want you to feed my sheep. I want you to lead my people. I want you to carry on. I want you to take care of the people, and I want you to follow me. Now, that's just a wonderful message for us as a church today. When we are so, so obsessed, sadly, with comparing ourselves to other people. Peter was the same. He's comparing himself to other people. There they are on the beach. Peter turns and sees the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper. It'd be John. When Peter saw him, he said, Lord, what about John? What about him? What's happening? What about him? Him? What about him over there? Jesus says, mind your own business. What I do with him has nothing to do with you. I'm telling you what I want you to do in your life and where you will go in your life. Never mind him. It's not your problem. You just keep your eyes fixed on me. How often do we look at other people and we think, how can I love them? Bearing in mind, we're talking about unconditional love, loving all people, loving the world, just loving, loving, loving. That's what we want to be as a church. We want to love, love, love. How is it that we can do that when we look at other people, half of whom we don't know them, some of whom we know we don't get on with, we don't get along with, some people have really wronged us, and we carry wounds, and if the wounds have healed, we carry scars. People we've never met before, how can we love them? We know nothing about it. Yet we come up with these fantastical statements as churches saying, oh, we've got to love everyone, and isn't life wonderful? Peter couldn't do it. Peter couldn't do it. He couldn't do what Jesus was asking him to do, to love unconditionally and to love all people. Yet still, Jesus accepts him and sets him to work. And I want us to hear this, brothers and sisters, because too often we think of ourselves as so inadequate that we can't do the task of building the kingdom. We think of ourselves as so frail, and we make that terribly, terribly bad mistake, disastrous mistake, of looking at other people and comparing ourselves with them, for better or for worse. Either I'm glad I'm not like that person over there, or, oh my word, I could never be like that person over there. I so, so long. If I was like that person, then I could do what Jesus wants me to do. And Jesus comes back at us all as individuals and says, don't worry about them. You just look at me. You just look at me. I love you and I call you. And whatever your situation, you might be the president or the king of a major nation. You might just be someone without a job and without a family and without a home. You look at me. Don't worry about anybody else. I will use you. And, you know, for all of us, that is such a wonderful, wonderful message. Jesus longs for us to live in a place of agape. I can't do it. I could do it with those who I know love me and those whom I love dearly. I would die 1,000 deaths rather than see any harm come to my children or my wife. We could all do that. But that's not difficult, is it? Jesus died for those who crucified him. That's unconditional love. And we kid ourselves if we think that we can do that. So we need to do some careful thinking when we talk about loving the world around us. But we also need to accept where we're at. Because some of us in this room today have a different capacity to some others in this room today of loving. Some of us are able to be more sacrificial than others. So some of us have a real heart for people. I know one lady, she bursts into tears whenever she sees someone who she knows is not saved. She knows that person doesn't know Jesus, and she's surprised. Her heart bleeds for people who don't know what it is to walk in relationship with Christ. I don't have that. I don't have that kind of compassion. We're all different. I long for them to be saved, of course. That's my job. That's what I do. But I don't cry about it. Maybe I should. We're all of us in a different place. And Jesus looks at every single one of us and he says, I will use you where you're at. And as you walk with me, we will grow together. As you drop your nets and follow me, I will teach you to be fishers of men, fishers of people, fishers of humanity. Fantastic passage about loving the world around us, about loving Jesus and about being welcomed by him and accepted. If there's anyone in this church today who doesn't feel accepted by Christ, I want to assure you that no matter what your understanding is of him, he accepts you. He doesn't want you to stay as you are. He doesn't want Peter to stay as he is. But he accepts you, and he loves you, and he calls you, and me as well. You can just imagine Jesus in conversation with Peter. And okay, Peter, so, okay, you can't strike the full deal, can you? Okay, that's all you can manage. You can only philia me. You can't agape me. Okay, let's do it anyway. Let's go. Let's do it. You're the rock on whom I'm going to build my church. Do you know what that means? That means that Jesus is building his church on an imperfect people. That means that you and I, friends, are being built on. Jesus is so gracious. It's unbelievable. This morning at the first service, I was talking about Jesus being the cornerstone, about Jesus being the cornerstone of the building. You know how in the days before technology, you had to have the cornerstone right in the right angles to set the levels and the whatnot for the whole building. Otherwise, it's all out of line and it's not true. And the disciples became the foundations of that spiritual house. And there's this kind of picture of a perfect house and everything that's built into it, this spiritual, you know, Peter talks about us being living stones in 1 Peter. And it's all going to be absolutely great. And this church is going to build, and the kingdom's going to grow, and it's going to be wonderful. Right off the starting block, even before Jesus ascended, who becomes part of that foundation? Dear old imperfect Peter. I like Peter. He reminds me of me, except I'm not as courageous. He puts his tongue in gear before his brain very frequently. He acts rashly. He's a bit impetuous, a bit spontaneous in the things he says. He gets himself into a mess. And what does Jesus say? I'm going to make you a central part of the foundation of this spiritual house. Peter. The great Peter. And it will be okay because I will work with you. Follow me. How many of us just don't follow because we don't think we've reached the bar? My friends, unless we put our nets down and follow, we will never reach the bar. Because we only reach the bar by following. When you get to the books of 1 and 2 Peter, which are written a few decades later, Peter's a much, much older man. He's not this young, burly, strong, muscly, working fisherman. He's mellowed. In the book of 1 Peter, some 20, 30 years later, you get a very different picture of a man who has grown in this journey of following Jesus and has learnt what it is to agape. And very soon he would know what it would be to give his life for his Lord. Peter made the grade, but he didn't make it before he followed. And so, friends, as we look at love, as we look at what it means to love the world around us and love everybody and love, 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 all I need is love, however it goes. Let's not forget that this type of love is gritty love. This is a love we have to really work at. But please, my prayer is, let us not beat ourselves up when we don't manage it. If Peter didn't manage it, you and I ain't going to do it. But we keep persevering. And our God is so patient, so gracious, so forgiving. He never, ever, ever, ever gives up on any of us. Ever. If we just keep following and keep going. What a fantastic road it is to walk the Christian path. It's a privilege, isn't it, to do it together as his church. I've said enough. I need a drink of water. Should we sing? Where's Anna? Oh, she's over there. If you wish to stay seated, then please do. We're going to sing a couple of songs, but let the rest of you stand. Stand if you're able. It's good for us to worship the Lord.